Hello world, welcome back to the PocketGamer.biz podcast with me, Brian Baglow, and the editorial team for our becoming regular Week in Views. Joining me today, we have our editor, Daniel Griffiths. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there. Nice to be here.
And Paige Cook, our deputy editor, who's joining us for the first time. Welcome on board, Paige. It's lovely to have you.
It's nice to finally be here.
Well, it's been overdue. It's been overdue. So thanks, folks. And we're just going to dive straight in because what a week. Apart from anything else, it's been Game Developer Conference, so GDC week, and everyone in the games world is going to be going to have an opinion on that. But what's been catching your eye? Daniel, we'll come to you first.
Well, the thing I've been looking at, we had our Pocket Gamer Connect event in San Francisco, which is immediately before GDC. Craig, of the team, he is there right now, which is why he's not here right now. He's been at the Pocket Gamer Connect event and then straight into GDC afterwards. It was our biggest event in America yet. So yeah, we had over 1,000.
That's fantastic.
Attendees. We had something like 3,000 people get tickets for our party. But as the way for these things, I think only about 1,000 people turned up. But that's good because that was the capacity of the. Of the room, which is good. I think that you know how it is. Everyone says, "Oh yeah, yeah, I'll be there." And if it's a free party, you just put your name down for absolutely everything. But yeah, that was absolutely rammed as well. Speakers at the show. We had Netflix, Scopely, Hasbro, loads of content coming forwards, and video will be going on the site from that. So yeah, a great success at San Fran. So yeah, I've been there. Keep an eye on that, and then the GDC stuff, which we'll come to shortly, and generally getting ready for the next Pocket Gamer event, which is the Game Expo Summit Dubai, which is on May 1st and the 2nd. So, yes, busy week. What with all the news that we're going to come to as well,
and not just small news either, but something potentially seismic as well. So yes, I know how busy you guys have been. Just keeping an eye on everything coming out of San Francisco can be exhausting. And as you say, not just GDC itself, but our own PGC event, which is always a total joy. And Paige, how about yourself?
For me this week, obviously I do a lot of our sort of features and lots of interviews come through me. So this week I spoke with Sansoft CEO David Fernandez. We sort of discussed their Barcelona office and the MENA region and its sort of growing potential. He was saying how gamers in Saudi Arabia, Egypt and the UAE are all like very significantly on the rise, and because of that means they're growing too. It was nice to hear that they're hiring. It's nice to hear places hiring rather than letting people go for a change. We also had a good conversation about the stigma of gaming, particularly mobile gaming. This was a conversation he and I had at PGC London earlier this year, and we sort of picked back up on it, and he made some interesting points that, you know, that as an industry, even though we're so at the forefront of sort of culture and technological change, the gaming industry isn't always necessarily recognized for the work that it does, and it's not always celebrated enough. I think when mainstream media is picked up with gaming, a lot of the time it's negative stories. So yeah, he had some interesting thoughts on that, and it could probably be its own podcast topic, I think.
hugely.
And then another thing wasn't an interview that I did, it was one from Craig. He interviewed Mattel's global head of digital gaming, and I just thought it was an interesting read because obviously they spoke about the development of a new Barbie game, which I don't think is a surprise to anyone, given the success of obviously last year's movie. But I'm just very intrigued to see what happens when it comes out. And it's one of those ones where I'm intrigued to see what numbers it does and just, you know, the power that big IPs like that can have.
Absolutely. Oddly enough, we've mentioned Barbie several times over the last few episodes. So it will be fantastic to see exactly what they're planning, because I think you're right. It could be a huge sleeper hit. And the stigma of gaming and mobile gaming is something I still find perplexing. You know, we've got over 3 billion gamers around the world. The market's worth you know, close on $200 billion this year. It's an insane amount of money. It's the biggest entertainment medium in the world. And yet people still get sniffy about it.
Yeah.
Or say, oh, you know, I've not played anything since Space Invaders. And it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be the one writing the article then. Moving on. So we'll skip straight into our news run through. So GDC week, Daniel, what's been catching your eye?
Well, yeah, it's well worth highlighting GDC and the difference between GDC and what makes it's truly unique. I mean, it's very dev heavy. You know, this won't be a surprise for those folks that have ever been or been looking in. So it turns out, you know, it's light on fun and new products and announcements, I always found. Industry commentator Matai Lancharich said the other day in the newsletter, he said, another year, another GDC, and GDC equals Gaming Dad's Conference in full swing. He put, which made me laugh. It made me laugh out loud, but he was particularly harsh. Gaming Dad's Conference. Are we now at the stage where games are so commonplace that, you know, a meeting of game developers and artists, you know, it's the Gaming Dad's Conference. It's so boring. Oh, you know, but I just thought that's how sort of far down the line we are. And I suppose I should be grateful that, GDC, it's so taken for granted that it's not even the least bit hip. So it was an interesting way of looking at it. Hot topics this year, AI being super big, you know,
of course,
you know, things come and go, blockchain and this kind of thing was on the right. AI has kind of supplanted that in folks' attentions and conversations. Quite a few Web3 things, Web3 booths back on the rise. You know, mm-hmm. the death of the metaverse and Web3 is very much overrated. It is lurking. We'll see what happens in the coming years. But yeah, it was being spoken about, and there is money perhaps in the wings waiting to wash in and boost that. Mobiles, a lot of talk about the Sensitower and Data AI deal, which we'll talk about mm-hmm. shortly. Yeah. And we have an interview with Tom Sree, the COO of Sensitower, is coming up. Gosh, big shows, the big things on the floor. Godot. Godot had a big presence on the floor. And we have an interview with W4 Games. I'm assured that it is pronounced Godot. So,
yes.
Thank you. You know, people say Godot. I've heard them. It's Godot, so
yes,
massive respect.
But Daniel, some people still say GIF, and that's why before anyone comes in the podcast, we do ask, and if they say GIF,
it'll never catch
they don't
on.
Get to come on. So, no, Godot it is.
Godot, yeah. As a you know, big up to the Samuel Beckett massive out there. So they'd be delighted with that. The San Fran show, I've mentioned, great success. The Hibernia, where we did the show this year, is an old bank, so the venue was great. If you've seen the, it's like the robbery scene at the start of The Dark Knight. It's an amazing venue. So we'll doubtless do it all again some other time. But yeah, if you were there, thanks for coming. It was a great couple of days. Like I mentioned earlier, going to do it all again. Pocket Game Connects is coming to the Dubai Games Expo Summit. Powered by Pocket Gamer Connects, which is on March the 1st and the 2nd in Dubai. So do join us there. Gosh, other stuff. While I'm on a roll, I just can't hold it back any longer. I want to talk about Apple.
Go on, do it.
I've got to talk about America versus Apple, which is good. And when the news broke, as recently as yesterday, you know, when it broke, I just wasn't surprised at all when I saw the headlines and instantly started typing about it. I've got a big. We had a story yesterday, of course, and I've got a big sort of think piece going up for the weekend on that. You know, my thought is, in case you don't know, the Department of Justice in America has basically stepped in and have finally pointed the finger at Apple in a kind of a European Union DMA type way, and said, you can't do that anymore. We're not happy. I think Apple detractors will be hoping that this will all be over in a fortnight, and Tim Cook will be dragged off in cuffs, you know, before the month is out. This is just going to go on for years and years. So you know, as a new site, we're going to get a lot of mileage out of this, frankly. You know, without going into the finer details of the thing, I feel like they kind of brought this on themselves, and it's a long time overdue. And this is a massive Apple fanboy speaking. Never forget that fact. I own an Apple everything, and I love the fact that it all just works in double quotation marks. So I'm not the sort of person that wants to see them slapped down or beaten up, frankly. But yeah, they brought this on themselves. They had it coming. You know, their reaction to the DMA, I think, has poked the Department of Justice in the ribs, and they feel like they have to do something. As to who it's benefiting, you really have to think about it. Apple fans like myself, I'm perfectly happy. I love it. I'd love it if everything was 500 quid cheaper, but I don't think I can't see this DOJ judgment having much effect on the price of stuff. But that's the only thing I want. I love the fact that it all works together, and it great. So I'm a bit hazy on who it's trying to appease exactly, but I do feel like, yeah, they had it coming. They do have to do something. They do have to open up more. And their treatment of the DMA and their application of what the DMA tried to apply is they have been taking the piss, frankly. So, yeah, I'm intrigued. What do you guys think? Who are they going to get taken down? Is that the end of Apple? What do you reckon?
I feel like I'm the odd one out because Brian, are you an Apple fan? Do you have all the Apple product? Because I know, obviously, Daniel, you're a big Apple person. So am I the odd one? Am I the only one that doesn't own anything Apple?
Brian is proudly waving his iPhone there. carrying it along.
I do realise that on an audio podcast, that may not have come across to the audience. But that's why I'm here. It's bringing the professionalism. So I am an Apple fan. And as Dan says, it's lovely that everything is interconnected, everything works. I would argue that while the iPhone was really shiny and the operating system was beautiful, it's that interoperability that absolutely sold it. And the fact that you had to put your credit card details in and then the App Store and iTunes were right there on your device, that was seismic for the games industry. That transformed the games industry, disrupted in a good way. And the whole notion of video games, you know, before the App Store, games cost 50 quid and you needed to buy a console. And this really recontextualized them and put them in the hands of people all over the world. So I'm incredibly happy with Apple's walled garden. But I do recognize it is a walled garden. And, you know, a lot of the big tech companies are facing scrutiny over their monopolies. And let's face it, Apple has the hardware, the software, the stores. So much comes under their umbrella that they're almost like the fundamental, the bottom layer. If they started buying up, you know, the actual mobile infrastructure, it would be an Apple world. But as Dan says, I think they have brought it on themselves. They've really not played nicely. So I don't think they've got anyone to blame but themselves. But trying to start unpicking all of this and finding ways to, you know, restructure such a huge kind of ecosystem is going to be massively problematic, hugely expensive. And let's face it, Apple have got the deep pockets to keep this rumbling on until the iPhone 20.
I think that's the thing for me. I'm not opposed to Apple. I don't have a problem with Apple. But I just think there's a level of, sometimes I just don't feel like there's a fairness there with them. And sometimes I just feel like there's a little bit of shadiness in the things that they do. You know, there's sort of a new regulation comes out and they're like, oh, okay, so we have to go along with this. But then they try and find every which way to cut as close to the rules as possible. And I just think that sometimes there's just that lack of freedom and lack of support with Apple. And I feel like if you're like you guys and you enjoy being in that walled garden, brilliant. If you're an Apple user that kind of wants to escape the ecosystem, you can't. So I'm very much so Android, all that sort of stuff. My partner, Apple. And for the last few years, every single time she's like, oh, new phone, I might try something that isn't Apple. But because it's so hard to then sort of take all of your Apple stuff with you, it's just like, oh no, it's too much hassle. I'll just stay with Apple, even though I don't want to pay these ridiculous prices. So I think, just to play a little bit of devil's advocate, I suppose I wouldn't mind if they were knocked down a little peg or two, because like you said, I think they've brought it on themselves, but you know, they are the big powerhouse. So I suppose that they're going to do that. They're going to sort of push the limits of what they can and can't get away with.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because, yeah, I mean, that's exactly what the DOJ are after. You know, there are people that say, I'd love to move away from an iPhone, but I just can't. And as soon as that situation pops up, it's like, hello, you know, there is a legal issue to be had here. And that's exactly the case. If you're happy in the walled garden, you know, it's great. I mean, I'm old enough to remember, you know, I had PCs for years and I hated them and they never worked properly. And I remember when I first started in journalism, talking to one of the editors of PC Format magazine back in the day. And he explained to me that, he says, oh, well, PC Format's great because with PC Format, the hobby is trying to make your computer work. And that's what we're here for. We're here to help you to make your computer work. And it always stuck with me. The hobby wasn't what you did with your computer. It was trying to make the bastard thing do what it was supposed to do. And that's fundamentally wrong. And, you know, this is in my first sort of few weeks as being a journalist. And the other thing that happened in my first few weeks of being a journalist was I was given a Mac for the first time. And I said, what the hell is this? And why has it only got one mouse button? And having it explained to me, you don't need two buttons. You just don't. You just don't. And I was fascinated. And from that moment on, I never went near a PC ever again. So, yeah, so I can remember when Apple were the plucky underdog. And so, as Brian referred to there, when they cured the mobile app and gaming space by creating an app store that only charged developers 30% of their profits in order to reach their audience and create these wonderful new products, everyone was delighted. So for this to kind of flip reverse into Apple, the evil nightmare kingdom that we're all trapped in, it makes me smile. I'm not saying that they don't do stuff wrong. You know, the implementation of cloud gaming on iPhone, the lock-in with iMessage, you know, is I never saw that coming at all. But yeah, that's a profound reason not to move away from the platform. You know, I get the point. I get the point. And they should have been a little bit more open and a little bit more the benevolent spirit that they were at least 20 years ago. They've kind of screwed it. And the annoying thing is that, you know, for me, the road ahead for them would be to roll over and acquiesce and fix this quickly. But they're not. They're going to dig their heels in and increasingly look like the tyrant for the next, 3-4 years, frankly. So we're not going to, no one's going to feel the benefit just yet. It's just going to be misery and argument. So yeah, we'll see what happens at the end.
Well, who would have thought at the start of 2024 that one of your bingo card options would be, if only Apple had the relaxed laissez-faire attitude of Google, they wouldn't have got themselves into this mess.
I know, it's crazy. Before we move on, I just want to say one thing, and that is, if the Department of Justice break the fact that all my Apple stuff works perfectly with each other first time out of the box, I'll be absolutely furious. Quite whose door I'll knock on or who I'll phone, I've no idea. But yeah, if they break this thing, I think that would be a great shame. If they make it even better, if there's a glimmer of things, if there's more choice, more openness, if devices can come down in price, and if more people can feel the benefit of, you know, what Apple are doing, regardless of platform, perhaps, then that would be a good thing. But if they just break this thing that works really well, that's not what we want.
Very true. Very true. Wise words. We're going to keep moving swiftly on. Paige, what was the big news for you this week?
Well, the big one was Sensor Tower buying Data AI, which, you know, I don't really think anybody saw this coming. And I think if people sort of had, you know, had a little think about this idea, I think a lot of people would have assumed it would be data AI buying Sensor Tower. So I think that's just quite the turn of events that the one that seems maybe a little bit smaller ends up just out of the blue, we're buying them. And yeah, I think, you know, the two merging together, I think it leaves it as a bit of a weird space, because they're sort of left with no big names that are competitors. Like, I know there are others out there, but I'm not sure on the level of who's out there to this level. And I suppose there's just, you know, there's pros and cons to it. And I think the first standout one is obviously a massive con, which is, you know, there's going to be layoffs inevitably. If you have two companies essentially doing the same type of thing and they merge, you get that doubling up of jobs and some people, you know, lose their roles, which is never nice. But for me, I think, you know, the positive it is that I assume with this combined force, the data that they can provide will probably be even better than it was before. But then at the same time, I'm thinking, well, if it's even better and there's less competition and they're the only go-to, can they just drive their prices way up? So, you know, I'm still sort of wondering if this is a good thing or not so much of a good thing for the long run.
Yeah, it is an interesting one. And as you said, the fact that it was that way around, it's like Linux have bought Microsoft. You know, it's maybe not quite that far, but it's an interesting thing, because Sensor Tower were raking in investment, but Data AI were three times ahead of them, frankly. So I love the idea that you know, I mean, every game has its end game. Every company has its end game. It's plan where it wants to be. Yeah, Sensor Tower have stuck their neck out. They've borrowed and obviously acquired an undisclosed sum of money from there's been a couple of investors that have been named in that. But yeah, they're really going for it to acquire Data AI, frankly. And Data AI were like, thanks, we'll take the money and we'll quit. We're living the dream. This is where we always wanted to be, where somebody is braver than we are and is going to buy us. So yeah, that's why they're cashing out, and that's why everybody cashes out in the end. So yeah, Sensor Tower are up to their necks in it. They've got themselves Data AI. They are officially huge. Let's see where they go from there. As Paige says, there will be some synergistic efficiencies in offices around the world taking place very shortly, I'm sure, which is always a shame. But yeah, ultimately, what's not to like? If the data becomes better, and the process of using and implementing that data becomes easier because you've only got one service to go for, and hopefully it might even become cheaper. Who knows? Yeah, it's an interesting one, and I'm keen to see what the likes of Game Refinery at Magic, what their response is going to be. Maybe they'll get bought too. Maybe their goal is to cash out and become subsumed, or maybe they're going to put up a fight. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see if the service gets better, then it's good news all around, and I hope that's what happens.
It's an intriguing one. And for any of our listeners who aren't familiar with Data AI or Sensor Tower, these are massive data analytics companies that provide insight into the mobile games market, and sometimes incredibly granular detail. So it's not just, you know, this game got X number of downloads, or, you know, has Y number of users in this country. You can look into its business models. You can look into its mechanics. You've got granular data on genres and subgenres. So before you ever commit a line of code or a single penny to making a new game, you can go out and you can look for trends, micro trends, all sorts of incredible things. If you're a bit of a data geek, and I have to put my hand up here and say, I sadly am, over lockdown, I taught myself the R programming language to go and do data analytics. Never actually used it since we all got back to the real world, but it was brilliant. These companies are the absolute pinnacle of games analytics, and they can do things and provide insight that I don't think people outside the really top tier developers and publishers are actually aware of. So this does create, you know, very much a super group of, you know, the biggest and the best. So we will have to wait and see. We have no idea what's going to happen. It's still kind of hot off the presses, as it were. But I'm really intrigued. I've spent a lot of time digging into the data AI service. And Sensor Tower have done some of the, you know, the most valuable reports and kind of trend analysis out there. So I think this can only be a good thing. But again, are we seeing the start of a new monopoly? Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed wait and see where we go from here. But as always, folks, we'll be the first ones to bring you the data. So let's keep going. Daniel.
It's State of Unreal and what Epic did at GDC. Yeah, so a packed week this week. In amongst all the lovely stuff that they showed off, which I'll come to, the big highlight there was, you know, the fact that they were publicly saying and announcing on stage that they are making an app store on iOS and Android, which isn't really a surprise, but it's nice for that to be so upfront. Now, whether the likes of Apple have acquiesced in some way and the two have shaken hands before this show started, or whether they're just steamrolling over what Apple would like. Apple have been throwing up walls for Epic to jump over as regards getting an app store onto iOS. Just thinking about the champagne that'll be popping in Epic's HQ roundabout now that Apple have finally been dragged into court. But it was great. I mean, there was some confusion around Apple's rules regarding app stores, possibly only being able to feature apps by the same developer account as the maker of the store. That seems to have got thrown out and glossed over in reading the latest Apple guidance, or at least, you know, Epic's interpretation of it. You know, devs can agree for their apps to be distributed in alternative app store, and that's all it takes. So that was good. So I'm delighted to see the arrival of the of app store as a confirmation that was made real. At the end of the day, I do fear fragmentation. Basically, you know, we touched upon it earlier. Call it monopoly, call it what you like. You know, one thing to call it would be, if you've got an iPhone, you go to the App Store and there are all your apps to acquire and purchase and make payments into. So, you know, I'm reminded of the old days where if you wanted an app, you had to go to a certain place to get it. And, you know, that conversation between people of oh, well, where did you get that app? I haven't even heard of that one. Oh, well, it's in the App Store that I use. Oh, which app store is that? Oh, it's this one. Well, I haven't even heard of that app store. You know, I worry about it becoming harder and more sort of diverse for people to find what it is that they're looking for. And ultimately, I have to ask again, you know, unless the games and apps get better and they get cheaper, you know, what is the benefit for the user? You know, I'm sure that Epic, certainly initially, you know, that they're going to be making much more generous payouts to developers and publishers, so that's a good thing. But, you know, as long as the user gets to cheaper apps and they're easier to find, then you know that's the real goal that we should be working towards. That second goal, you know, from the user point of view, I'm not really seeing an instant win, but I hope it'll come. What do you guys think? Do you think, you know, having an Epic App Store, is that going to change the game and something to celebrate? What do you reckon?
Not sure if it's going to change the game. Well, not initially anyway, but I think it's sort of a big move for, you know, third party app stores, and they're sort of leading the way with this now. And, you know, it gives developers, you know, a good incentive to use their store, because essentially they're going to get more money at the end of it. And yeah, you know, the point about the users, I suppose it is kind of like, well, what is the user benefit for using it? But I suppose at the same time, there's not necessarily a negative for them either. You know, it's nice to have more options. You know, when you go shopping, sometimes you want to go in more than one place. So, you know, I suppose there's that. And then there's the potential that, you know, maybe there's some cheaper deals on there for them. So, yeah, I think that part of it's interesting. The bit that I'm sort of unsure on this, and I did sort of have a, obviously, read into it and stuff. What is this just EU? What's happening with the US? Do they, is there anything on that yet?
No, this is purely EU, yeah, so far. I mean, obviously there's an intent for it to be to be everywhere, but until they're forced to.
Because I suppose that causes a divide. If I play a game here and I'm like, oh, this game's brilliant and I've got it on this store, you should play it. And then they're like, I don't have access to that store. So I suppose that's potentially an issue.
I just keep coming back to the bad old days where you know, where just getting a version of a game on a particular model of mobile phone was a nightmare. I'm sure it won't come. It won't be as bad as that. But yeah, any kind of fragmentation and it's a worry for me. Brian, what do you think? Is this a return to the dark ages of faffing about on a phone, trying to find a game and making it work?
I don't think so. I think the goal here is to increase competition. Let's be honest, the consumer market is such, and we're seeing this in the console world, reaching as many people as you can is the goal. When you're a company operating at the scale of Apple, Epic, Google, Steam, who is, you know, are noticeably absent from this whole discussion right now, trying to build exclusives, trying to kind of cut people off and give people a reason to come to your place rather than the other place, seems a little counterintuitive. So I think we might see a bit of that initially, but the consumers are going to drive this. 3 billion people in the world, and if you're not reaching, it's 3 billion people playing games in the world, I do beg your pardon, if you're not reaching a billion of them because they can't access your service, are your shareholders going to understand? So, you know, we're talking an awful lot about alternative app markets. And it doesn't seem to make an awful lot of sense to try and, you know, carve this out. It's like having multiple shops in the high street. You know, you can go there and get it, but limiting access or keeping things away from the maximum number of players doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense. So I can understand why Epic are doing it. They're not paying the 30%. To go back to Valve, let's not forget, they created Steam when they were doing Half-Life 2 because they didn't want to pay EA to distribute it. So they built their own platform to distribute it digitally. And I remember how we all laughed going, that's insane. Why would you do that? 20 plus years down the line, we can see why they did that. And that's worked out quite well. So, you know, I think we're going to get increased competition. It's going to open new doors. But whether we return to the days of the multiple walled gardens, I doubt very much. I think the consumer demand is just going to drive things far, far, far too much.
Yeah, it's cool. Other stuff with Epic, you know, I'll touch on it very briefly. Their Marvel game, that 1943 Rise of Hydra game, yeah, looked fantastic. You know, we'll see what it's like to play. But yeah, if the message is from Epic is look, we've got the store, we've got the platform, you know, we've got the tools that you need to make great games. Yeah, they are selling themselves very nicely as the developer and player's friend at the minute. So yeah, the Unreal Engine, 5.4 demos looked amazing, and with phones getting all the more powerful every year, you know, I can't wait to see what's going to happen. But yeah, things are on the up, it seems, and things are shifting. So it's always good news when things get swapped around and thrown up in the air and changed around a bit. But yeah, they're doing their best to shake things up.
Fantastic, thanks, Daniel. Paige, back over to you.
Yeah. So another one we had this week was Tencent taking on two of ByteDance's game studios. So they're essentially taking the two, merging them, and it's going to be one, you know, new studio. You know, and obviously ByteDance, initially they seemed very in on games and they were putting all of this money and effort into it. And then last year they were kind of like, actually, you know, change of heart, we're gonna back away from that. And, you know, we saw discontinued projects from them and, you know, a lot of cuts for their game related commitments. So, you know, I think this is just one of those things where it's probably the first of a few. You know, I know they've got other studios that are still under their belt, but, you know, I'd wager that at the moment ByteDance is also looking for buyers for those as well.
Yeah, this what are they doing? They're offloading Moonton, the creator of Mobile Legends. But yeah, it's what goes around comes around. You know, they need to be seen to be getting into games, so they make this big play with their Newverse and Marvel Snap, which is great. And it's like, oh, great, you know, ByteDance, you know, where'd this come from? And at the first glimmer of a decline in games and an increase in regulation in China, then the hot topic is to be seen to be getting out of games. So yeah, it's interesting. You know, I won't pretend to know the machinations of big business, certainly not in the Far East anyway. But it's just feels like it's all for show, really. Again, it seems a shame, you know, that they want to be so big in it, because that's gonna make them look good, and then months later it's a complete reversal of fortune. A knee-jerk reaction is strange. But yeah, I only hope that the, you know, the games that they're investing in do bear fruit and do come to reality for Tencent instead. You know, I admire folks for sticking with it and trying to make the best possible product. So yeah, nice try, ByteDance, but you know, if you don't want to play the game, then yeah, just get out of it.
I think it is unusual that we're still seeing tech giants and companies from other areas jumping into games and just assuming blithely that they can take a big chunk of the market without necessarily understanding the sort of the peculiarities of the games world. Because it's happened over the last 3 decades now, Daniel. You remember the sort of the 90s, every music label had to have an interactive arm. Every media company was jumping into games. My own journey into games with Grand Theft Auto, it was BMG.
Yeah, BMGI.
Interactive that published the game. Yeah. BMGI. Yeah. Way before this whole Rockstar thing started. And, you know, ByteDance are not a stupid company, but what they're doing with TikTok, and there's another monopoly and, you know, discussion maybe for next week, is really clever. And so diversifying into games seemed an odd decision at the beginning, but I'm not really surprised that they're jumping out. It's that so many companies get into this, have a look at what it takes to run live games, keep studios up. You know, if TikTok users aren't happy, they don't tend to congregate and, you know, let's be honest, make death threats. Games fans do.
God bless them. Lovely bunch. Lovely bunch.
And Daniel, we're coming back to another tech giant for your next piece. But we're going to LinkedIn, slightly less glamorous than the TikTok side of things.
How dare you say that about LinkedIn? LinkedIn, everyone's favourite social network, isn't it? I just found the LinkedIn could be hosting games, just made me laugh, you know, because when you think of LinkedIn, you think of fun, right? So as if LinkedIn wasn't enough of a game already, frankly. I'd be interested to get your opinions on LinkedIn, but you know, I find, yeah, how do you play LinkedIn? You know, I find it terrifying. It's, yeah, first of all, it's the most show-offy social network ever. You know, everyone sort of got over it with Facebook and Twitter, you know, the humble brags that you see on Facebook. I had a friend of a friend on Facebook complaining that that their lawnmower was acting up and their lawn was so large that this was going to be a huge problem for them this weekend. And you're just thinking, mate, just shut up, you know. And so the idea that you know, LinkedIn is this taken to the next level, full of blowhards and braggarts all those people that you went to school with, the founder of media companies that bear their own name, this sort of thing. But yeah, so the idea that it was going to be gamed in some way, and they were going to make it even more fun to be there, just made me smile. I was thinking about you know, whether they should start dishing out gold stars for you know, the biggest show off or the most prolific liar, or CEO of the most non-existent company, perhaps. But yeah, I am. Yeah, good luck making LinkedIn fun. But yeah, I dip in. A massive shout out to all my LinkedIn colleagues. You know, you're wonderful. But yeah, I dip in fleetingly. Let's put it that way. You guys, big LinkedIn fans?
I am curious as to how it's going to work, because being honest, I just use it for work purposes. Like, it is useful sometimes with, you know, particularly because obviously I do a lot of sort of interview things and feature bits. It is useful for that, but I would never personally go on LinkedIn and just start chatting about my day or anything like that. For me, it's just not that platform. It's very work and business focused, and, you know, I kind of thought that was the point. So the idea of putting games into there, I'm curious how that's going to work. You know, go out, do a bit of networking on your LinkedIn to find something. Oh, bit distracted by my game, let me just pop on that for 10 minutes. So yeah, I don't necessarily think it's a terrible idea or a great idea. I'm more just sort of very indifferent, and how exactly is it going to work, and what's the benefit? Just LinkedIn's more fun now.
Well, I'm going to be controversial. I use LinkedIn a lot. Like you, I use it just for work purposes, Paige, but I've got quite a lot of different bits of work, you know, Scottish Games Week and Games Network and Pocket Gamer and Steel Media and so many bits and pieces. And when we're looking, Peggy and I, when we're on the main podcast looking for guests, LinkedIn is a great source. But it's taken me years to get there, because at first it was, there's somebody I know, or I met somebody at an event, and you would track them down, find them. It was a bit like Pokemon, you know, it's, I've got to catch them all, I've got to make contacts and connections. But for a large part of the population, it's become their social network of choice, because it does everything that Facebook does, more or less. But you can kind of keep it on a professional level. So if you're freelance or a consultant, or you're out there looking for business, and who you are is your business, it can be incredibly useful. You can take it too far. But weirdly, when it comes to gamification, and I know it's a dreadful word, but if we call it maybe applied games, LinkedIn does some quite clever things in terms of keeping you engaged, giving you feedback, you know, letting you choose how you use it. So it caters for different user types way better than Facebook does. But if you're not on it, you don't kind of know. But there's an entire audience out there who will post multiple times daily on LinkedIn, and never touch Twitter or X or Instagram or anything else, because it's to do with their work, their career, their profession. So I actually get a lot out of it. Now, it's not fun, I have to say. So maybe that's one thing that they just want to be a little more quirky. And let's face it, Zynga are not going to jump into this and ruin it for them. So, you know, like they killed Facebook gaming. So who knows? We could see something. Maybe LinkedIn has its own Wordle up its sleeve, and we're going to see a games reaching an entire audience who's normally a little bit sniffy about video games.
Yeah, maybe that's kind of the point. It's this thing that is very much seen as, for a lot of people, a place for business. So, you know, put games in it, and it makes it feel a little bit more of a happy, casual place you can also be. And you can talk about your day-to-day on there, and it not just be solely for work. So maybe that's sort of how they're trying to counterbalance, you know, what LinkedIn is used for and how it's seen.
Very much so. Very much so. So we're going to keep this moving. This is going fantastically well. So Paige, back to you. Hybrid casual.
Yeah, so this was an interesting one. The hybrid casual is said to generate 800% more revenue. Every time I read that, I was like, 800? Okay. And this is according to Adjust and AppLovin's Inside Report. And it was based on the top 5,000 gaming apps. You know, I don't know if I was expecting 800, but I can't say that I'm surprised to see that hybrid casual is doing well. I know it's still considered a somewhat new genre, but you know, I think that mix of some hyper casual elements with more mid-core stuff, I think that just really works. It gives games a little bit more depth and a bit more meaning, which, you know, usually means players have more incentive to come back, and the more players come back, the more they're willing to spend. You know, I know with me, if I play a mobile game, if I'm only playing it for a couple of days, I probably won't spend anything on it because there's a good chance that in 5 days I've moved on to the next thing. But if I find myself playing something for sort of over a week, I'll be like, you know, I'm obviously enjoying this, and you know, maybe I'll buy a pack of something. So, you know, to me it makes sense that it's doing well. The report did highlight some other bits as well. It sort of went into the fact that a lot of the most successful games were ones that are already established. So, you know, your PUBG Mobile, Candy Crush, Roblox, you know, no surprise that they're all still doing very well. And obviously the new standout, which is Monopoly Go. I know you guys spoke about that on maybe last week's podcast because it got to the 2 billion mark already. So, yeah, the report sort of goes into some details on that as well. So it's an interesting read, as there's lots there.
Yeah, I think, yeah, this hybrid casual rise, very welcome as far as I'm concerned. It seemed like the right way. It feels like there's been a sort of a global intent to lure people into games and picking up their phone and using their bit of free time with them, hyper casual. But yeah, ultimately, to make them stick around and make them perhaps even put some money into it, you need a better and more carefully thought out bit of gameplay. So the fact that hybrid casual is amping these folks up and has taken over from hyper casual, yeah, I think I think it's good. Yeah, hyper casual games, you know, as a gamer, they're fascinating, and I think they've done an amazing job introducing people to games. But you know, yeah, I'd rather see the games be that little bit deeper. And I think now in 2024, we're in a place where people understand that and appreciate a carefully crafted game with some smart monetization options in there, of course, much more so than hyper casual. So yeah, for me, hyper casual, not dead, not by no means. You know, the conversation goes back and forth, but yeah, it's yeah. Thank you, hyper casual, for bringing these folks on board. Now, hybrid casual is taking them to the next level.
Well, we've heard a lot about hybrid casual from guests on the podcast over the last couple of years. And most of the people are saying it's hyper casual is an incredibly hard market to stay in. It's finding the themes, making the hits, monetizing the hits. You know, there's so much reliant on data and analytics and getting that cost per install and that annoyance of adverts to cross at just the right point, so people will stick with it long enough to give you some kind of, you know, return on your investment and revenue boost. So all the big studios, all the people who kind of made their name in hyper casual, are looking very seriously at hybrid casual and how, as you've both said, to increase that depth, increase that longevity, so you can still use your hyper casual games to bring the people in, but it's hybrid casual that's going to convert them or keep them, or is just a little more consistent in terms of revenue and predictability, so that you can run at the scale of somebody like a Crazy Labs or a Voodoo. So it's, yeah, I'm with you, Paige. I'm not surprised. And I think we're going to continue to see this whole market change and evolve in a lot of really interesting ways over the rest of 2024 and indeed beyond.
For sure.
And then finally, Daniel, back to you. Call of Duty Warzone.
Yeah. It's worth mentioning. We'd be remiss not to mention the fact that Call of Duty Warzone Mobile is out now. So yeah, waiting for the official number, but yeah, they had over 50 million signups. So in advance, which is absolutely huge. Yeah, it's fantastic. I don't know whether you tried it out yet. It is a big old game. We're talking about an 8 gigabyte download, and entertainingly, it comes in two halves. I have to question why the necessity of that. So you look at it and you kind of go, it's only 3.5. 3.5 gigabyte, I can make room for that. And it downloads pretty quick. And the first thing it does is like, yeah, and now I'm going to download another 5 gigabytes. So it's like, oh, okay, fine. But that's the price you pay. But yeah, it's awesome. I love the way that they've implemented the controls on mobile. I mean, it's such a finely tuned game. And there are so many people that have such high expectations about it. Trying to play it on a touchscreen, it's not the best thing, but they've done their absolute level best to make it work. So there's lots of auto options you can turn on, where the AI in inverted commas within the game will suss out what it is that you're trying to do, and will do it for you, so that you don't have to lunge and hit buttons. The ability to fine tune the controls to exactly how you want. You know, it's amazing. You know, I'm reminded of back in the day, GoldenEye on the N64, where it had these countless different controller options to try and cater for everybody's tastes. You know, Warzone has that to the nth degree, in that you can just put the controls and what controls you want wherever you want them on the screen to the millimeter. I think it's very finely attuned to its quite hardcore audience that are going to be playing it. As for the game itself, I'm not sure as the merits of having 120 players, whether that's any better than Fortnite's 100. I don't know, but yeah, it remains to be seen what the take-up is. But the reviews are great. I think it looks great. I think it plays fantastic, certainly on the phones from the last couple of years. Are ideal for it. It's going to be massive. I think they've got everything right. I think it's going to be huge.
Well, I have tried it. I downloaded it first thing, and straight away Google Store, it had already, you know, over 100 million downloads on the Google Store, no surprise. And then, like you said, it's kind of that, okay, let's play, and there's a big loading screen while it downloads something else, and it's like, okay, we'll wait for that. I've got a very new Samsung, so I'm thinking, you know, phone should be fine to run it. My first match, it's very weird, because when the game loads up, it kind of says that, you know, graphically it's currently streaming, and the more you play, the better the game will look. So I thought, that's, you know, very strange, but and it's very true, because initially it was awful. Everything on my screen was flickering, you know, the clothes they were wearing was flickering. I was like, you know, how am I supposed to see enemies to shoot at when everything is like flickering? But yeah, then oddly, as you play, it sort of stabilizes and the graphics do become a little bit clearer and a bit better. So yeah, very weird. But how you were saying about the controls, it does work well, and it plays nice on a phone. Like, it's quite easy, which I wasn't too sure if it would just feel, you know, as someone that's played a lot on console, I'm sort of like, am I going to miss that? But it played quite nice, and it sort of, you know, automatically, if you hover over an enemy, they sort of shoot. You don't have to keep pressing it. So, yeah, I think it is going to be a hit. It's just whether people can adjust to that, you know, keep playing, and it will look better, which is just very odd. I've never seen that on a different game for mobile,
That is a point that worked pretty quick for me, but yeah, that is true. It kind of, the more you play, the more it sort of fills in the blanks. Now, I wonder whether that's some sort of incentive for repeated and you know, your lengthy play. You know, it's going to get better. Keep playing. I wonder, but it does work. It does. You know, personally, I'm not sure as to whether it's the perfect mobile game, but they've done a damn good job getting a game which in theory shouldn't work on mobile at all onto the platform, I think.
I think the clever thing they've done is the cross progression. So whether you play on mobile or if you play, I think it's got cross progression, obviously, with just your normal Warzone and Modern Warfare 3. Which one are we up to now? I lose track with the Call of Duty games. There's so many. But I think that's the smart move, because, you know, if you play it on your console and you get a new weapon or a new, you know, whatever it may be, and then you play it on your mobile, you still have that progression. So I think, you know, that's quite clever.
Well, I've not played it. I wasn't planning to play it, so I'm going to shut up and move on.
get somebody to play it for you and look over their shoulder. It's worth a look.
Just look at all the flickers that happen.
I still maintain that first-person shooters should never have leapt from PC onto console. So unless it's got a mouse and a keyboard, I'm not interested.
Wise words.
That's not true, folks. That's not true. But In the interest of keeping this down to under an hour, we're going to charge on to a Week in Views section. So that brings us back to you, Paige. Take us through the headlines.
Yeah, I'll try and keep this one a little bit brief, but my Week in Views was Supercell axing Clash Mini, which it has axed it, but it's kind of integrating it into Clash Royale at some point. I'm not sure logistically how that's going to manifest itself, but I think it's quite a smart move. It means that all your hard work isn't completely null and void because it's still going to be there in some capacity. And it's quite smart that if you're not a Clash Royale player, but you are a Clash Mini player, well, now you're going to have to be a Clash Royale player to go and, you know, keep playing this game. So it's potentially quite smart. You know, Supercell aren't exactly strangers to killing their games, but I personally think that, you know, sometimes it's good to know when to cut your losses. And, you know, they did sort of state that the game wasn't a failure. It just, you know, it wasn't where they wanted it to be at. And, you know, rather than pumping resources into that, just, you know, sort of, you know, just move on. And I get that. Last week, we had an interview with Supercell's new head of live games, Sarah Batch, and she sort of explained that, you know, they're very much so in keeping with all of these bold changes that were mentioned earlier in the year by their CEO. And, you know, they really want to get sort of back on top of their A game. And I think this is just sort of one of those things that is in keeping with that. I know the killing of a game instantly sounds like a negative thing, but, you know, like I just said, sometimes it's good to know when to move on and when to just do the next big thing rather than trying to keep something alive that just isn't going the way you want it to.
Yeah, I think folding it into the main game is a smart move. It's only going to boost the main game and it's going to keep Clash Mini fans happy. But yeah, I love watching what Supercell do, and they're an intriguing bunch for sure. And I think it's a smart move.
Agreed. You know, they're going their own way. They're doing what's right for them. It's an operating at that kind of level, that sort of scale. They're making decisions that I think might cause some dismay in the short term, but are probably going to position them really well across the rest of this year. So fair play to Supercell. Daniel, how about yourself?
Yeah, the thing I've picked out, my favourite thing of the week this week, we had a great feature on the site, Paige organised, which was there's a mobile ads masterclass, how to select the best ad format for your game, which is a great feature by AdQuantum, as did AdQuantum Design's creative production director, a guy called Ivan Razmakov. He does a brilliant breakdown of the science of ads, which I always find ceaselessly interesting. As I say, from a gamer, you know, this peek behind the curtain stuff, I absolutely love. It really breaks down the games into their core appeal, and the way that he very methodically just goes through, you know, are you a thrill-seeking person, in which case casinos and action games, a problem-solving person, puzzles and engineering games, competitions and collaborations for the social gamers, mastery games, completing of checkpoints, is that the sort of thing that you like, skill improvement games, on and on it goes. But like I say, it's super interesting, because you will find yourself somewhere in there nodding, saying, oh yeah, that's me. Well, there is a type of ad and a positioning of ad that is perfect for attracting you, and Ivan's got it all spelled out. He even assesses the merits of fake ads and horrible ads that don't make any sense, which I find absolutely fascinating. I've got to mention, you know, fake ads are brilliant, and if you're in the business of making terrible fake ads, yeah, you've got a fan right here. The Kylie Jenner ad for Travel Town that was on Instagram is perhaps the laziest "Can I have my money" ad I've ever seen, but by merits of the fact that it's Kylie Jenner barely paying any attention to the game and barely understanding what she's talking about, it got shared by millions on social purely because they were so surprised that she'd taken the money for the advert. But yeah, what does it matter? It's mission accomplished. You know, millions and millions of people are talking about Travel Town and Kylie Jenner's advert, which she practically, well, quite literally phones it in, shall we say. Likewise, Kate Beckinsale's ads for Dice Dreams, in which her children embarrass her for stealing coins in the game. Eva Longoria does a Dice Dreams advert as well. I mean, she's great. She looks fantastic. But unless you've been tracking Kate Beckinsale's progress across five Underwood World films and 2021's Jolt, you probably haven't seen her for a while. She's very Hollywood these days. So as a result, you might not recognize her, shall we say. So all the adverts feature somebody saying, "Hey, Kate Beckinsale, fancy meeting you here," or some such, just so that you know who it is. With a very fickle audience, ultimately you have to, when you have to say who your celebrity is, one does have to wonder whether you're getting the right person. But, you know, massive respect to the Kathy Bates and Pedro Pascal adverts for Merge Mansion, those ads for Metacore. I blame those guys for putting it out there. Great ads done well, brilliant, love them. And poor ads done poorly, I love those too. So keep them coming. It's a big win all round, and I hope big game makers get to grips with real world adverts and real world celebrities soon. But in the meantime, it's great fun looking in.
Well, as somebody who is a massive fan, and my hyper casual gaming does give me a lot of access to adverts from the hyper-casual market, where they seem to have gone onto one of those websites where you can get a celebrity to record a message for you for like upwards of £40.
That's the budget.
And I have seen literally hundreds of adverts for this one particular game, and I think I've known one person who was on a comedy show, British comedy show in the late 1980s, and it's just like, okay, guys, I mean, yes, it's a great way of making your marketing budget stretch further, but I'm not entirely sure you're reaching the right audience or doing yourself any favours in terms of credibility. So having said that, advertisers and marketers out there, the pocketgamer.biz team are available, expert, wise, and it's an audio podcast so you can't see, but incredibly well presented.
we'll do anything for money as well. That's
basically what it boils down to.
It's good. Yeah, I'll wait. I'll be on my LinkedIn waiting for waiting for the calls to come in. Thank you for that, Brian.
An absolute pleasure. Well, folks, I think that brings us to the end of this week's Week in Views. As always, if you want to get a hold of us, if you want to reach out, if you have any comments on the show, please do get in touch. You can reach us at podcast@pocketgamer.biz. And as always, wherever you get your podcasts, if you leave a like, a review, and maybe even share it with some friends, family, and loved ones, it really helps, and it means that we're getting the word out there and sharing all that is good and magical about the world of games. It only remains for me to say, Daniel, thank you.
Thanks.
As always, a pleasure.
Thanks a bunch.
And Paige, it's been an absolute delight. You have to come back next week.
I will. It's been really good. Thank you.
And until then, thanks, folks. We'll speak to you again soon.